Hello, this is Gidon Rothstein, and this is Perek Chaf of Sefer Melachim Aleph. And in this Perek, we're going to watch, as we have so many times, this odd interplay between Hashem being angry with Malchut Yisrael, and yet at the same time still using them or helping them in the name of letting the rest of the world see that there's a God in the world. One of the things we have to always keep in mind is that the point of the Jewish people is not only that we should learn to serve Hashem, but that we are meant to be the representatives in the world of Hashem. So that when the Jewish people are victorious, even if they're imperfect, even if they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, it nonetheless redounds to Hashem's name in the world. And that will figure mightily in this perek, where almost nobody will walk away happy, but except that Hashem's name will have been once again repeated to the people. So in Pasuk Chaf, in Perek Chaf, Pasuk Aleph, Uven Hadad Melech Aram Kavat Et Kol Chelo, Ushlashim Ushnayim Melech Ito V'Sus V'Rechevi, the king of Aram, Ben Hadad, amasses a huge army with allies, a coalition of the willing, 32 other kings, horses and chariots, V'yal V'yatra Al Shalmron, V'yilachim Ba. So he comes to fight against Shomron. He sends messengers to Achav. He says, all your gold and silver is mine, and your wives and your children, the good ones, are mine as well. So, as you say, my master, the king, he gives in. He says, whatever you want. Now, the Radak thinks that when he says that, he doesn't mean I'm going to actually give it up to you. He means I'll pay you a tribute, like as was the custom in those times. I'll be your vassal. I'll pay you a tribute. I will be subservient to you in every way. But Ben-Hadad is unsatisfied or not satisfied with that acceptance. This is what Ben-Hadad wants to say. When I said to you that you have to give me your gold and your silver and your wives and your sons, I mean it. They're going to come to you tomorrow, my servants. They're going to search in your house, ved batei avadecha, and all of your servants' houses. All the best treasures of your eyes, all the best treasures, all the best things that you have, they are going to put in their hands and they are going to take. Now, in Radak's reading, where Achab never really meant to actually give him everything, so we understand why this would be a new level. It's the original one was, everything is mine. And Achab says, in the sense of, I'll give you a tax every year. And he wants to say, no, I don't mean that. I mean, I'm actually going to come in, I'm going to check everything, I'm going to take all the best stuff, I'm going to take whatever I want. Rashi, however, thinks, and this represents the tradition of Chazal, that complicates our vision of Achav, right? Achav is so evil, as far as we've seen so far. Chazal think, and Rashi reports it, that Machmad Einecha means Sefer Torah, means the Book of Torah, and that Achav says to himself, and this is in Rashi's words, "In zeh sheli levadi shel zikni Yisrael hi," and that's why he calls it the Zikinim, and they decide they can't put up with this. To let Ben Hadad take the Torah, they can't do that. And so Rashi says, even though they were idol worshippers, they also respected Torah. And this harkens back to things that I've said before, is that the picture of Malchut Yisrael is not a picture of those who reject God and Torah and all these things, and that's why the Nevi'im have some impact. It's a pagan society in which it's all true, and they're unable to distinguish among truths. So here too, Achav is an idol worshipper, and yet he also respects Torah. And the idea that Ben-Hadad would take from him the Torah is intolerable, is unacceptable, and that's what gets him to resist. Really, gold and silver did not get him to resist. It's something to respect about Achav. The loss of gold and silver didn't get Achav to resist. The fact that he'd have to pay a tribute, perhaps, of slaves as well, didn't get him to resist. But the idea that he was going to take Torah, then all of a sudden Achav says, I can't go that far, and this is an aspect of Achav to pay attention to. And it's one that I think makes the experience of idol worship more understandable than it might otherwise be, and more similar to our times. Because in our times as well, there are many people who have commitments competing with Torah, and they don't understand that they're competing. They think they're just other commitments. So I'm committed to this idea, whatever it may be, plus I'm committed to Torah. And if you back me against the wall and say, I'm going to take Torah away from you, I would certainly resist. Pasuk Zayin, Vayikra, Melech Yisrael, Lechol Zikni Haaretz, Vayomer, Duna, Ur'u, Ki Azim, Ivakesh, Ki Shalach, Elai, L'Nashev, L'Nai, L'Chaspil, Zahaviv, L'Omanandim, Imenu. He's just looking for an excuse, because when he sent for me for my women, my children, my money, my silver, my gold, I didn't object, I didn't hold anything back. So now you see that if he's asking for more, he's really just looking for an excuse. So they agree with him, they say it's time to resist, this is unacceptable. So Pasuk Tet, Achav says, Vayomer lemalachei ben Hadad, Imru l'adoni ha-melech, Kol asher shalachti al avdecha barishona e'aseh, v'adavar hazeh lo uchal la'asot v'yelchu ha-malachim v'yeshivuhu davar. So notice, Achav does not just decide to rebel and to say no. Achav stresses, I'm still willing to do that first set of demands. So it's not like Achav decides, I try as hard as I can to be mean to Achav when he deserves it. Here he's acting in some way heroically. He is making clear that in Chazal's reading that his commitment to Torah heavily outweighs his commitment to money, gold, wives, and children. And he says, I can still do the wives, children, money, gold part, gold, silver part, but not this part. And so the Malachim go back and they tell this to Ben-Hadad. Vayishlach elav Ben-Hadad vayomer ko yazuni Elohim v'ko yosifu. That God is a swear, it's an oath. Im yispok afar shamron lish'alim v'chol ha'meshev ha'raglai. I have so many people, I want you to know, there's not enough dirt in Shomron, there's not enough ground in Shomron to fill the sandals of all the people that have with me. If we just walk by and pick up some of the dirt in our sandals, we will take all the dirt of Shomron. Meaning he wants to tell him that I've got so many people, there's no way you can resist. Vayan melech Yisrael vayomer, daberu ayitalel choger kimfateach. So here, Achav's dander gets a little bit up, and he says, tell him that one who is just putting on his belt for war should not be praising himself like one who's already taking it off. Meaning when you come back from a war victorious and you unloosen your weapons belt, as it were, so then you can say, we won, we did these great things, we did these miraculous victories, and we're great. But when you're just going to war, you never know what's going to happen. And that's obviously not what Ben-Hadad thinks. Ben-Hadad is confident, overconfident, absolutely positive that he's going to win. But Achav is warning him that that's not true. So when Ben-Hadad hears this, v'hu shoteh, and he's drinking, v'hu uveham melachim basukot, he and the other kings are in tents together, and they are drinking. Okay, start the battle. I think the reference to drinking is supposed to show us how absolutely confident he was. He has no need even to engage himself in the battle. The kings in those days were military leaders, and yet this is a battle that's beneath him. He says, go fight. So Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'nei Navi Echad, Nigash El Achav Melech Yisrael, Vayomer Komar Hashem, Haraita Et Kol Ha'amon HaGadol Hazeh, Hinei Novi Elcha Hayom, V'yadata Ki Ani Hashem. So a Navi comes along, and Rashi says, in Chazal's tradition, that's Michayu Ven Yimla, which is striking because of who it's not, more than of who it is. We know that Mikhail ben Yimla is the Navi around this time, but what's interesting about it is that it's not Eliyahu. Eliyahu is perhaps on his 40-day journey, he's elsewhere, but he's not here, and he's not the relevant Navi here. So Michayahu comes and he says to Achav, you see all these people? You see all these masses? You're going to win. And the point of the prediction is to know that God is God. Vayomer Achav b'mi. So Achav says, who's going to lead the victory? Who should I send? In other words, Achav believes the prophecy. Vayomer komar Hashem, b'na'arei sarei ha-medinot, vayomer mi yasarei milchama, vayomer ata. He says, it'll be the na'arei sarei ha-medinot, the boys. And then he says, so who should start the war, should lead? And he says, you. Because that's what Achav does in Pasuk Tetvav, Vayif Kod. Ed na'arei sarei ha-medinot, vayu matayim shenayim u'shloshim. There are 232 of them. V'achareim pakad kol ha'am kol b'nei Yisrael, 7,000. And after that he has 7,000 people in his army, and they go out at noon, so they leave and they go out to war. And again, you got to remember that Ben-Hadad has tens of thousands of people, and Achav has 232 leaders of the battle and 7,000 people following them, and yet they go out to war on the basis of the Navi say so. Sometimes the self-contradiction is just too much for me to watch and to wonder about, but that's the way it was. They both believed and they didn't believe. So when they go out at noon to take the war to the Arameans, as it were, Uven Adad Shoteshi Kor Basukot, he is drunk, drinking in his tent, Uvamelachim, Shloshim Shnayim Melech, Ozerotel, with all of his other allies and the 32 kings with him. Vayitzun Arei Sarim Medino Parishona, Vayishlach Ben Adad, Vayigidu Lo Lemor, Anashim Yatzu Mishamron. So the Narei Sarim Medino, the young noblemen in Shamron come out. And so the people, Ben-Hadad's people, sent him, and they say there are people leaving Shamron. And so now again we'll see his contempt for the fighting abilities of this group of people. Vayomer im neshalom yatzao tifsum chayim. The melechama yatzao tifsum chayim. He says, if they came out for peace, so take them alive. And if they came out for war, take them alive. In other words, Ben-Hadad is so confident, not only that he can defeat them, but that he can capture them alive. Now that's a whole different level. Of being able to ensure, and especially in days when people have swords and things like that, and the only way you capture people is by going in personally, he's nonetheless sure that they will be able to take them alive. So these Narei Sarei Medinot come out. So I'll just point out that Rashi suggests that these Narei Sarei Medinot is Bnei HaTa'aruvot. They are children of mixed marriages. Shayu kol asarim shel she'ar ha'umot notnim b'neihem arevim shelim ribdubo. That Achav himself also had vassals and subservient kings, and that they used to deposit with him children of theirs in order to assure Achav, right, they were sort of like ransom or like guarantors, that to assure Achav that they wouldn't rebel, so they would leave their children there, and that these are the ones who are going to lead the war. So Ben-Hadad says, we'll get them alive. And yet in Pasukav, it doesn't go that way. Vayaku ish isho, vayanusu aram. They each kill the people who they battle with. Meaning in battle in those days, you would meet up with a person, you would fight a battle with him, then you kill the next person. So they each kill their person, and Aram realizes they're losing, and they run away. Vayidefem Yisrael, and the Jews chase after them. So Ben-Hadad has to run away on his horse and chariot. And so now Achav, the king of Israel, comes out as well, and he kills a lot of horses and a lot of riders, and he makes a great mark on the Aramim. I'm just noticing as we're reading, and I wanted to highlight for you to notice that in this parag, the king of Israel, who is Achav, as we saw Rashi assuming, and we all assume, is being referred to, however, only as Melech Israel. And I think part of the reason for that is that the emphasis is that it's in his role as Melech Israel, the king over the Jewish people, that he's mirroring all this. Achav as an individual almost definitely doesn't deserve this. It is in his role as the leader of the Jewish people, who are Hashem's nation, that he's getting these abilities. So in Pasuk of Bet, Vayigash HaNevi HaMelech Yisrael Vayomer Lo, Lechi Tazkit Chazek, Vuda'u Re'e Tasher Tasek, Ki V'tshuvat HaShana, Melech Aram Ol Alecha. So he says to him, the Navi says to him, be careful and prepare yourself and make yourself ready, because by the end of the year, or when the year turns around again, when it comes around again, the king of Aram is going to come back. So the Navi doesn't guarantee him now that you'll win just by supernatural, you don't have to do anything. The Navi says, you have to do your preparations, so prepare now, because he's coming back. So the servants of the king of Aram tell him, you have to understand that their God is a mountain God. And that's why I think the word Elohei should be read in the chol version, in the secular version of the word. It doesn't mean God like they're recognizing the one mighty power that created the universe. It means God with a small g, like all the other gods. And he's a mountain god. And that's why they beat us. But if we fight them in the plain, then we'll beat them. And this, again, is the central tenet of paganism, is that there are many powers. It's not that the Jewish God is not a god. It's he's one god among many. And the question isn't, who should we worship? It's how do we make things go our way best? So if our God is a mountain God, we should make sure to fight our wars in the mountain. If our God is a plains God, we'll fight them there. And that's what the Arami advisors are saying to Ben-Hadad. And the Varazi say, so now do this. Aser melachim ish mimekamo v'sim pachot tachtehem. Remove the kings, each one from their place, and put noblemen, put sub-officers under them. V'atatim nelecha chayel kachayel hanofel me'otach. Mesus kasus v'rechav karechav v'nelechama otam b'mishor. Yim lo nechazak mehem v'yishma lekolam v'yaske. So they say, in other words, replace the kings with noblemen and take the kings with you, and then completely replace the army that you had before. Meaning, the amount of the army was an important amount of army. That was the army that was the right army to have in that situation. So we'll replace that army and we'll fight them in the right place. It was a matter of strategy. We fought in the wrong place metaphysically because they had a hill god. And he listens to them and he does exactly that. So when the king year comes around again, Vayivkod Ben-Hadad et Aram, he counts Aram again, right? He counts to figure out how many of them there are, and what he's going to find is, obviously, that there is a huge numbers of Aram. So what does he find out? And he goes to Afeka, he counts them, and he goes to Afeka to fight with the Jewish people. So they also numbered themselves and they'd gotten themselves ready with all of the tools that they needed for a war. And there are as many of them as there were the previous year, the Radak says. So they didn't add people. They had not lost any people, and they went out with the same numbers, which shows a certain amount of trust in Hashem as well. They camp opposite Aram, and it's like there are two small flocks of sheep, and Aram is filling the whole land. Pasuk Kafchet, Vayigash Isha Elokim, Vayomer El Melech Yisrael, Vayomer, Komar Hashem, Yana Sheramru Aram, Elohe Harim Hashem, Velo Elohe Amakim Hu, Venatati et Kol HaHamon HaGadol HaZeh B'Yadecha, V'Yedatem Ki Ani Hashem. So Michai comes back with another message, that it's the perfidy of Ben-Hadad that is going to lead to you winning now. It's not you deserve to win the victory. It's since they said that God is a God of the mountains and not a God of the valleys, that's why I'm going to give them in your hands. So they encamp for a week. Again, the Jews win a huge victory. They kill 100,000 Arameans in one day. And they went. And the rest run away to Afeka, which was the nearby city where they're having the war. And the walls fall down on them. And Ben-Hadad didn't get killed, and he runs away, and he's hiding in an inner room in Afeka. So the servants say to him, "We've heard that the Jewish kings, the kings of Israel, are malchei chesed, are kings of kindness." So by which they mean that since they're kings of kindness, nasima nasakim b'motneinu v'chavalim b'roshenu v'nitzei el melech Yisrael ulai yichayet nafshecha. Why don't we just put on mourning clothing? We'll put on sackcloth and we'll put ropes on our heads, meaning showing that we are recognizing our lowliness, and we will prostrate ourselves before him. Maybe he'll let us live. And that's what they do in Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Vayachkiru sakim b'motneihem v'chavalim b'rashehem v'yavo el melech Yisrael v'yamru avidecha v'nadan amar t'china nafshi v'yomer ha'udenu chai achihu. So Ben-Hadad servants come and do this, and they say to Achav, please let him live. And Achav's reaction, I think, is instructive. Meaning, we know that Malchei Yisrael, they say, Malchei Yisrael, Malchei Chesed him. That the Pasuk doesn't suggest is a problem. But his reaction seems striking. He says, is he still alive? Achihu. He's still alive. He's my brother. V'anashim yinachashu v'yimaru v'yachotu amimenu v'yimru achicha v'nadar v'yomer bo'u kachu So the people are very excited, and they understand, and they rush, and they say, absolutely, he's still alive, and he's your brother. So he says, bring him here. And Ben-Hadad comes, and he brings him up on his own chariot with him. And Ben-Hadad says, He says, I think it's Ben-Hadad who's saying it. Let me just check that's what Radak says. He says, Ben-Hadad says, the cities that my father took from your father, I'm going to return to you. And you can put rulers, you can put sort of representatives into Damascus, my capital city, the same way as we have until now had people in your city. And I will make a covenant, a pact with you. And so he makes a pact with him and he sends him home. This is what Ahab does. So Ahab's reaction, I think, is striking because Ahab, and this isn't the only time Ahab will do it, Ahab will do it other times as well, where Ahab now reacts as if he's the one who had won the victory, as if it's within his rights to decide what happens to Ben-Hadad, right? And his reaction also, even before he decides what happens to Ben-Hadad, his reaction is, Adenu chai achihu. He's my brother. Now, I'm not saying there was a need to kill Ben-Hadad, because it's not clear if that's true, because I think it's certainly true that the reputation of Malchei Yisrael as being Malchei Chesedheim is probably part of what Hashem would want, as we'll see later on with other situations where the Nevi'im specifically say, don't kill people who have been vanquished already. So they're not killing Ben-Hadad is not the issue. The issue, though, to notice already, and it'll be highlighted in the rest of the parak, but the issue to notice already is that Ahav feels a kinship with Ben-Hadad, and that kinship leads him to then say, let's make a pact, and he's my brother, and I feel perfectly comfortable with him. When Michayu ben Yima had stressed before each of his victories that it was Hashem who was creating the victory. So if you ask me, and obviously I'm speaking from the vantage point of watching it being presented in Tanakh, but if you ask me, Ahav had the responsibility to turn to Michayu and say, this man has surrendered to me, what are my responsibilities? And that's what Michayu says to him in the coming Psukim. In Pasuk Lamed Daled, Vishachad mi b'nei ha-Nevi'im, and Rashi says Michayu again, Amar el Re'ehu b'dvar Hashem, he says to his friend, Bidvar Hashem, meaning he says to his friend, I had a nevuah, and the nevuah told me, Hakenina, hit me. Vayimayin aish lahakuto, and the man refuses to hit him. A striking moment, but not one I think that is foreign to what we can imagine happening in our times. Assuming that there was such a thing as nevuah, assuming that we believe in nevuah. But the pasuk doesn't indicate that the man doesn't not believe it's nevuah. He just refuses to hit him. So whether it refuses to hit him because he's not willing to be part of a bad prophecy for Ahab, that's one possibility, a problem, because his fear and his dedication to Ahab outweigh his response to Hashem telling him, that the Navi telling him, Hashem, that he has to do this. But I think it's also plausible that just he's delicate. I hate you. How could I hate you? I'm a nice person. Nice people don't hit other people. So when a Navi tells you to do something, you have to do whatever the Navi tells you. And that's part of a crucial picture of experiencing Nevi'im. It's actually a mitzvah in the Torah, that if a Navi tells you to do something, you have to do it. And Nevi'im, if they are well-established Nevi'im, can even tell you to break the Torah, with the exception of idol worship. If a Navi tells you, B'dvar Hashem, to worship idols, you're not allowed to do that. But if a Navi tells you, B'dvar Hashem, do almost anything else, you're required to do it. And so here the Navi says, hit me, and the guy refuses. I think it's just because he's not a hitter. And that's a problem. And so Michayu says to him, Ya'an asher lo shamata b'kol Hashem, you have directly rejected the Dvar Hashem. And people reject Dvar Hashem all the time because it doesn't fit with their picture of what kind of a person they're supposed to be. And I think that's what's going on here. Hinecha haleich me'iti, you're going to walk away from me, v'ikha aryeh, and a lion's going to come and going to kill you. And that's exactly what happened. He's killed by a lion. So it sounds extreme. Except that the rejection of Dvar Hashem is the rejection of Dvar Hashem, and the man pays for it with his life. So in Pasuk Lam Zayin, Vayimtza Ish Acher, Michal finds a different guy, Vayomer Hakenina, and he says, please hit me. Vayakeu Aish Hakeu Fatzo. So the guy does it. This guy listens, he understands what he's supposed to do, and he hits him, and he wounds him so that he's bleeding. Vayelech Hanavi Vayamod Lamelech El Haderech Vayit Chapes Ba'ifer Aleinav. He goes and he stands by the road where the king is. He's near the king, and he hides himself with ashes on his eyes. So his eyes are closed, so he's not as recognizable as he might otherwise be. The king is passing by, and he cries out to the king. We remember from Shlomo already that part of the job of the king is to see to it that injustices are taken care of. So crying out to the king was something which in those days was expected to get a response. I went out to the war. And a man came, and he brought me a captive. And he said to me, guard this guy. And he said to me, if the guy escapes, if he runs away, you'll have to give up your life, or you'll have to pay a lot of money, a talent of silver. And I was busy, and I got caught up in it, and I was in the war, and all of a sudden he's gone. So the king says to him, that's your judgment. That's what you did it to yourself. Right? Your job was to watch the captive, and you allowed yourself to get caught up in the war, whatever it is. You accepted upon yourself the conclusions of this situation. So Pasuk Mem Aleph, Vayamahar Vayasar at the affair. So he takes away all the ashes, so now he is under, now you can see who he is, Me'ale Enav, from his eyes. And then the king recognized that he's a Navi. So however the disguise worked, he now is undisguised. So he says, Hashem says, since you sent away Ish Chermi, meaning Ben Hadad, who was the person who Hashem had visited his judgment upon, and the person who Hashem had given into Achav's hands, but Achav's hands as a pikadon, as something to watch over, not that it was Achav's choice. So because you did that, now your soul will be instead of his soul, and your nation will be instead of his nation. Making the exact point that the Navi had made with his example. That Achav, and the point that Achav didn't catch. When Achav conquers Ben-Hadad, and he's been told ahead of time that it was Hashem who was going to do it, so then when Ben-Hadad turns to him for mercy, Achav didn't have to kill him, but Achav did have to hold him and then turn to a Navi and say to the Navi, and we're going to see another time that Achav will do that, and he'd say to the Navi, what should I do with this person? So that's what he's being blamed for. But look at Achav's reaction. The king goes to his house angry, and in a bad mood. His happy mood had left him, angry and annoyed, and he comes to Shomron. Now, what is that anger and annoyance? Is he angry and annoyed because he really did the wrong thing? It doesn't seem so, because then he could have just repented and he said sorry. We don't see any of that. I think he's angry and annoyed because in his experience, these prophets ruin every good thing in his life. Here it is. They give him a victory over Aram. He has a great victory. He reconquers, he gets back all the cities that the Jewish people had lost until that time, and he gets to become sort of a ruler over Aram, and he gets to leave representatives in domestic to prove that his rule, and now he does one small thing wrong, and the Navi has to ruin the whole thing for him. I think that is what Achav's reaction is all about, and it's instructive, because it's just that Achav didn't get the point. The point was that the victory wasn't Achav. The point was that the victory came from Hashem, and that Achav refused to recognize that, and that's what the Navi is telling him. And that's, I think, also part of what annoys Achav, is that it never gets to be him. It always has to be about Hashem, which is the way life is. It always has to be about Hashem. And that's why Achav is upset, and that's why this perek, which involves in it two miraculous military victories, ends with Achav nonetheless two miraculous military victories giving the Jewish people the northern kingdom a level of independence from Aram they haven't had in a long time, giving them back all the cities that they had lost, giving them dominion over Aram, and yet for Achav, the experience is negative because he's not allowed to do just whatever he wants. Have a great day.